back to reality. A powerful roaring filled the air. The lines in the sky converged on a point. The hieroglyph was complete. Darth Kratos vanished behind a shimmering force shield. Shigar stood unprotected, at one with the other troopers staring up at their deaths. He wasn't afraid to die. There was a bright flash, then another, then so many they became one simultaneous assault. Shigar shielded his eyes with his hand. That he still had a hand and eyes surprised him. He squinted through his fingers. The massive structure had generated a broad electromirror shield and was deflecting the full force of the blast back out into space. Relief flooded him, then dismay. He was still alive, but the plan had failed. What now? Darth Kratos emerged from his shield as super-hot clouds radiated above them. He looked as surprised as Shigar felt.
Unacceptable, he said.
A second series of flashes came from the south, where something else was undergoing bombardment from above. They turned to see another work of mega-engineering from the hexes drifting across the sky, trailing explosive streamers in its wake. An identical electromirror shield protected it, too. A skyhook, Shigar realized. The other half of the thing looming over him, undamaged by everything the Empire and the Republic could throw at it. He almost laughed.
It was all for nothing, he said to Darth Kratos. You, me, Lorin, everything.
Do you find this amusing, boy?
He didn't, but the moment had a hysterical edge all the same. He could agonize all he wanted about the choices he had made and would make about the Jedi Order's role in the Emperor's plans, and about the Republic's feet of clay when it came to taking decisive action. But if nothing stopped the Hexes, there wouldn't be a war at all. The future of the galaxy ended here.
You win, Lima Zandrit, he thought. Wherever you are.
Chapter 44.
Cinzia Zandrit stared out of her tank at the girl she might have been.
Don't look at her, whispered her mother.
Why not?
She's not real.
She looks real enough.
But she's not you.
She's me as I might have been.
You are not her. You will never be her. She is a lie, and she is evil. She is...
Shut up, Mother.
The whisper ceased. Cinzia's attention returned to the two people outside the tank. A mature woman with gray-streaked brown hair and her more youthful companion. Both dressed in blood-stained armor suits, both strangers, at least to the complex. One she recognized. She had seen that face all her life. It was her own.
Who are you?
The more senior woman of the two looked shocked and surprised.
Are you
Cinzia?
I'm her clone,
she said. There was nothing to be gained by hiding the truth, and there was no harm in just talking.
My mother took a tissue sample from me before I was taken away. She made me all over again. The same daughter, but better, purer.
That explains why you look younger, the woman said.
She glanced at her companion, who seemed incapable of speech.
My name is Satil Shan. What do you mean, purer?
The fluid I'm breathing suppresses my force abilities. There's something in it. A metal, I think, or an extract from something that feeds on metal. It keeps me safe.
Safe?
Now the other Cinzia spoke.
Dead, more like it.
The sneer on her own face, beautiful, she was pleased to see, with the addition of a couple more years, was simply horrid to behold.
See, her mother whispered. She thinks you're a monster. Call the droids now. She must be stopped.
No,
Cinzia said.
Let me talk to her first. I want to know what happened to her. I want to know why she's here.
She's come to destroy everything. That's what they do. They take and they destroy. They will show you no kindness, just as they showed none to her.
I told you, be quiet, Mother. Besides, I don't trust the droids anymore. You know why.
That did the trick. The eddying swirls of the fluid around her grew quieter.
Have you lived here all your life?
The woman called Satil Shan asked.
Yes. I can access all the complex's cams. Much of it's automated, you know. The droids are my eyes and ears.
You control them?
If I want to,
she said, although she was less sure of that now than she had been.
So, you're responsible for what's happening out there?
Asked the other Cinzia.
To be honest, she said, I don't know what's going on out there. They do seem rather busy, though. They're designed to protect me, and the definition of protect is a bit vague. I guess at the moment that means not telling me stuff. Whatever they're up to, I'm sure they mean well.
You should take a look, Cinzia, said Satil Shan. The hexes are killing people.
Are you sure?
Positive.
They would only do that if they were attacked. Why did you attack them?
They are a threat to the entire galaxy.
I don't believe you,
she said. The thought was entirely too preposterous.
You're just trying to distract me. This is a momentous day. The two Cinzias finally meet. I've been waiting for this, well, ever since I was born. At last, we are together. I want to hear everything about your life. I want to know if we like the same things, think the same thoughts.
I'm not you, said the older version of herself. My name is Eldon Axe.
Don't say that.
I'll say whatever I like. You're a freak. Mistake. I should kill you now just for existing.
The other Cinzia produced a glowing red sword and held it up between them.
See?
Hissed her mother.
She will do you great harm if you let her. Perhaps even kill you.
Don't be cruel,
said Cinzia to both her mother and her twin.
It doesn't have to be this way.
She's right, said Satil Shan, putting a hand on the other Cinzia's arm. Don't act rashly.
Yes.
The red blade came down.
We need to know what she knows. About the hexes. About Lima Zandret.
How did your mother die? Asked Satil Shan.
The droids killed her,
Cinzia said.
And the others as well. But she's not really dead.
Don't tell them,
whispered the voice in her ear.
Don't tell them!
Why did the hexes kill her?
They didn't want to sign a treaty with anyone. When the ship left...
The ship named after you?
Yes. Mother built that before she made me, and she never came up with another name. The droids didn't want people coming here, ever. It wasn't safe for me.
She almost shied away from the thought of what had happened next, but she forced herself not to. The disclosure was important if she and herself were ever to become one.
The droids killed my mother to stop her sending any more ships. The others tried to stop them, so the droids killed them, too. It was all very stupid, really. Mother should have known how the droids would feel.
Satil Shan nodded slowly.
So she wasn't on the ship?
No. That was Kenev and Marg Sar.
Why didn't she go with them if she was their leader?
They had no leaders. They didn't want to live like they had before. They wanted a change.
All right. But Kenev and Marg Sar never came back, did they? They killed themselves when the ship was intercepted by a privateer. They blew up the ship.
That was a shock. The fluid rippled all over her skin, and she hugged herself tightly.
They would have wanted to keep the cargo a secret,
she said, thinking it through.
The droid factory?
The plant. That's what we call them.
Something interfered with the explosion, said Satil Shan. The plant wasn't destroyed.
It must have been one of the droids. They wouldn't want to die, even though they had to.
That's what led us here, Cinzia. We came to find your mother, to ask her what she wanted to tell the outside world. That's all.
Cinzia waited for her mother to say something. For once, though, she was quiet.
I don't think she wants to talk to you,
Cinzia said.
You said she was dead.
She is, mostly. The droids took her body away, probably for recycling. But she's still here, talking to me.
Don't tell them.
She doesn't want me to talk to you either.
The two women outside the tank exchanged a concerned glance.
I'm not mad,
Cinzia said, feeling affronted.
I don't see how you could be anything but.
We just don't understand, said Satil Shan, shushing the other Cinzia.
No, you don't. My mother protects me. That's why the hexes are the way they are. She put herself into them, too.
We work that out. Both her flesh and her philosophy. They are flexible and single-minded at the same time, combining the very best qualities of machines and organics in one creature. Your mother must have been quite brilliant to think of doing that.
I still am, whispered Lima Zandrit.
She says she still is.
Don't you see how the hexes could be a threat?
Said Satil Shan, ignoring her comment.
They acknowledge no leader, and they want to be left alone. They don't want to die, and they want to protect you. How better to keep you safe than to destroy everyone else, including your mother?
It's logical,
she admitted, remembering how they had disobeyed her, too. Cinzia had begged them to leave the original Lima Zandrit alone, but there had been no turning them back, not once their creator had betrayed them. Cinzia's mother had programmed them too well.
It's insane,
muttered the other Cinzia.
You have to understand them,
she insisted.
If what you say is true, then it does make sense. It'll be hard to talk them out of attacking your friends.
Do you think you could? Asked Satil Shan.
I could try, but you'd have to promise to leave and never come back.
I don't think that would be possible.
Why not?
Your world is too valuable. Too many people know it exists now.
So? They don't have to come here. You have the whole galaxy. I just want one world. Is that too much to ask?
For some, it is.
Well, then, we're at an impasse.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Cinzia didn't like the way her other self was looking at her. There was such fury and hurt in those familiar features. She could never imagine looking that way, having that amazing hair.
Why do the hexes protect you?
The other Cinzia asked.
And not me?
Because they don't know you. You don't look exactly like me, or live like me in here. You look like one of the people who took you away.
I am one of the people who took me away.
But you're me, too. Even though you try to deny it. You don't have to be the way you are now.
How else can I be? I don't remember anything else.
Really?
Yes, really. And what's the point of trying? The droids will kill me anyway.
Maybe if we gave them a taste of your genetic code. Maybe then they wouldn't kill you.
So it'd just be me and you in a galaxy full of hexes? Is that what you want?
She shook her head.
I just want everyone to go away. Everyone else, I mean. Not you. We've got so much to catch up on.
I've got nothing to tell you.
But you have. Where you live. What you do. I don't know anything about anywhere. All I know is Sabaddon, where I was cloned. You can tell me about where I was born.
I don't remember any of that,
said the other Cinzia.
All I know is the Empire.
The what?
Satil Shan stared at her in frank surprise.
You've never heard of the Empire?
No. Should I have?
What about the Sith, the Republic, the Mandalorians?
Cinzia shook her head in irritation.
Stop showing off. You're making me feel stupid.
I'm not showing off. I'm just amazed that you've been so isolated here. It doesn't seem fair to me that your mother did that to you.
She's trying to turn you against me,
whispered the voice.
Be careful of that one.
Mother says I should be careful of you. Why is that?
Maybe she's afraid I'll take you from her.
I promise I won't try to do that, Cinzia. Satil Shan's face was as expressionless as someone trying very hard not to have an expression.
Is your mother with you now? In the tank?
Yes.
Is she another clone?
Not exactly.
The fluid swirled around her, agitated and wild. Cinzia was pulled away from the glass into the center of the tank.
I said, don't talk to them. Why don't you ever listen to me?
I always listen to you, Mother.
But you never do as I say. I told you not to tell them about me.
They'd guess anyway. Why make it harder for them?
They won't understand, Cinzia. You have to tell the droids to take them away. They'll obey you this time. You know they will. When there's a clearly defined threat, they have to act against it.
Just like they acted against you.
Yes, even me. The logic was impeccable. I was stupid to try to fight it.
Cinzia remembered the days leading up to that terrible moment all too well. There was no suppressing them entirely.
I think you saw it coming, Mother. You were afraid of the droids. You gave me the overrides in the hope that they would listen to me, but I didn't use them.
She remembered her passivity with painful keenness. Sometimes she felt bad for not intervening.
The droids are my protectors. You are my protector. I still have both. Was it wrong to do nothing?
I'm still here, Cinzia. That's right. We'll all protect you together.
But what if you were right, Mother? What if the droids have grown too powerful? That means you agree with Satil Shan and shouldn't argue against her. I should listen to her, too. Maybe I should use the overrides to stop the droids now, before it's too late.
No, Cinzia, you mustn't!
The fluid coiled around her tighter than ever. Even though she struggled, she couldn't get a grip on the glass.
Mother, let me go!
No!
I can't stand by and let innocent people be hurt. You wouldn't have wanted that.
I must keep you safe.
But I have to. You have to.
Thick currents closed around her throat and filled her mouth, silencing the words. She choked and coughed, unable to fill her lungs.
Cinzia!
The cry came from outside the tank.
Help me!
She tried to shout.
Save me!
With a shattering of glass and a great rush, the tank exploded. Cinzia was tossed and flung on a wave of writhing liquid. Her mother was screaming. She was screaming too. Something hard smacked against her flesh all down her back and legs. For the first time in her life, she felt her full weight. She couldn't move. She couldn't breathe. The pressure around her throat eased, only to be replaced with another.
She can't get enough oxygen, someone said.
The sound was all wrong. So was the light.
She's not used to breathing air.
What do we do?
That was the other Cinzia.
We have to keep her alive.
Cinzia flapped weakly with one hand.
Gene sampler.
She pointed to the machine that would feed the other Cinzia's genetic pattern into the Hex's collective memory.
Promise. Save.
We're doing everything we can for you, said Satil.
She shook her head.
Save. Mother.
She's in the blood, right?
Said the other Cinzia.
I thought she was killing you. I thought you were drowning.
Promise.
All right, all right. I promise.
Cinzia couldn't lift, but she could still grip.
Her daughter. Her daughter.
The other Cinzia came closer, dragged into focus by the last of her strength.
Tell me everything.
The body of the hairless, emaciated girl became still. Master Satil shook her head. Apart from the trickling and dripping of crimson fluid, the laboratory was silent. Axe fell back onto her haunches and put her hands over her face. What had just happened? Had she been trying to kill the girl or save her? Not just any girl, of course. Her own clone. Did that make it murder, suicide, or fratricide? She suspected she would never know.
I'm sorry, said Master Satil, touching her lightly on the shoulder. the shock killed her. With the right equipment, we might have...
Ack shrugged her off and stood too quickly. Her head swam. She imagined she heard a voice from the far depths of her memory, weeping and demanding her attention. She ignored it. The gene sampler was exactly where Cinzia had indicated it would be. Ax crossed to it and stuck her hand into its diagnostic chute. The cold machine pricked her, drank her blood, hummed to itself, and then beeped inquiringly. Ax felt a brief moment of panic. The machine wanted confirmation of something. A password? A command phrase? A code? She remembered everything Cinzia had said in her final moments. She'd made Ax promise to save what was left of Lima Zandrit. Was there anything else she'd emphasized? Anything at all?
Her daughter,
Ax said. The machine beeped confirmation.
What does that mean?
She asked the room in general.
Do the Hexes now think I'm her? Am I immune to them? Will they obey my orders now?
Master Satil had no answers, and neither did anyone else. The way the fluid from the tank tugged at her ankles told her nothing she wanted to know. It had nurtured and smothered Cinzia at the same time, just like Darth Kratos had Ax herself. Cinzia had broken free the only way open to her. Ax hoped to have more options. There was just one way to find out how the Hexes would react to her.
Let's go get one and see what happens.
Chapter 45.
Lorin was beyond surprise. After escaping the rain of artillery from the Paramount and riding the Skyhook all the way to the equator, it was with only a mild sense of concern that she felt the structure beneath her begin to drop. What now? Jop echoed her confusion.
I thought this thing was taking off, and now it's coming into land. I wish the Hexes would make up their minds.
The Skyhook lurched beneath them, and they gripped each other for support.
This doesn't feel like landing, she said. Something else it...
She didn't finish that thought. Every Hex in the structure chose that moment to let go of its neighbor, causing the whole structure to slump and sag downward. She was suddenly riding an accelerating wave of individual Hexes, not one solid structure. It was like surfing, but without a board, and a sea of molten lava instead of a beach at the other end.
Hang on!
She cried, as the wave of Hexes carried them downward. Jop clung to her arm as long as he could, but the tide inevitably swept them apart. Lorin crouched down and gripped the leading edge of a single Hex with all the strength of a prosthetic left hand, hoping to ride out the wave without tumbling or being crushed. The Hex didn't object. It seemed utterly passive. That surprised her, but she didn't complain. It was just another surprise on the heels of so many. The torrent of Hexes was sufficient to fill the crater that was all that remained of the former CI site. She flinched as a mass of red fluid rose up to meet her, but it wasn't lava at all. The bloody fluid came up to her knees, then stopped rising. She let go of the Hex and found that she could stand. Feeling like she was walking in a dream, she stepped from Hex to Hex toward the nearest crater wall. There was no sign of Jop, but she did make out a figure watching her progress on the edge of the lake, waving encouragement. As she drew nearer, she recognized the forbidding black shape of Darth Kratos. It wasn't him waving. That was the tall, slender figure standing next to him. Her heart tripped. It was Shigar. She increased her pace. Dream or no dream, she was going to take advantage of this development while it lasted. Shigar watched the green-helmeted figure crossing the seething mass of Hexes in the lake. He couldn't be sure it was her, and he told himself not to get his hopes up. But his gut was certain. There was something about the way she moved, the slight stiffness of the figure's left hand as it waved cheerily back. Darth Kratos stalked away, still trying to raise the Paramount on his comlink. Thus far, there had been no answer from the fleet above, even though the comms were finally beginning to clear. Shigar walked carefully down the bank as the waiting figure approached. He held out his hand and finally caught a glimpse of the face inside the helmet. It was indeed Lorin, and she was beaming.
With one powerful tug, he pulled her ashore. She flipped up her visor, and he did the same.
"Fancy meeting you here," she said.
"Are you crying?"
"What? No, I have allergies. And what if I am? It's been a long day."
He embraced her.
"It sure has."
She returned the hug, but not for too long.
"What's with the hexes?"
she asked as they pulled apart.
"I don't know,"
he said.
"The thing in the lake disintegrated as the Skyhook arrived. I didn't even know it was made of hexes until then. They look confused. Now they're not doing anything at all."
He spoke too soon. The center of the lake boiled and bubbled. Hexes writhed as the leading edge of something large and gray emerged from the depths. Shigar put his left arm around Lorin, ready to protect her behind a shield if this turned out to be a new kind of attack. But she pulled away.
"It's a ship,"
she said, hurrying back down to the lake's edge.
"Look!"
He shaded his eyes. The object did look like a starship. An older model of Imperial make, perhaps. The ship rolled, presenting one broad flank to the sky. A hatch opened, and two figures climbed out. A strange sound swept across the surface of the lake. A clicking of metal limbs moving through thick fluid. The hexes were stirring, forming a new agglomeration. All they made was a bridge connecting the ship to the shore. The bridge was aimed directly for Darth Kratos. He looked up as two figures began to walk toward him. Shigar and Lorin lopped to join him. A handful of other figures scattered along the crater rim did the same. Shigar picked up speed when he recognized Master Satil as one of the pair that had emerged from the ship. He felt a resurgence of optimism. First Lorin, and now her? Perhaps disaster had been averted after all. Accompanying Master Satil was the Sith apprentice, Eldon Axe. Her helmet was off, exposing wild red hair and dark-rimmed eyes. Shigar was close enough to hear what she said as she approached her master.
"I release myself from your service, Darth Kratos."
"Nonsense!" he said with a look of startled outrage. "You are my apprentice, and so you will remain until I judge you fit to be called a Sith."
"You will release me,"
she said, coming to a halt 2 paces from him.
"Or suffer the consequences."
He laughed.
"What possible consequences can you threaten me with? Don't tell me this pathetic Jedi has turned you."
He raised his lightsaber and adopted a ready pose.
"I will kill both of you before you take a single step toward me."
Master Satil drew her blade in response, and Shigar wished he hadn't lost his. But Eldon Axe didn't move.
"I have not been turned," she said. "I've simply realized how I have been used. My anger was constantly directed outward, at my mother and Dal Striver, or inward at myself. The person I should have been most angry at was standing right beside me. My teacher, my master, you."
Darth Kratos grinned like a skull.
"Anger leads to hate," he said. "Hate leads to power. See how well I have taught you."
"You have indeed taught me well. And so I release myself from your service, my lord, knowing that you never would."
A growing sound from behind her caught Darth Kratos' attention. The hexes were rising up in an enormous swell and flowing out of the lake. Dripping blood-like fluid, they came en masse for the huddle standing on the crater's edge. Lorin took Shigar's arm and pulled him well out of the way. Master Satil joined them. Only Axe and her master stood before the ghastly tide. Lightning flashed. Darth Kratos' lightsaber stabbed and cut. But there were too many of them for one man, even a Sith Lord, to hold them back. Axe did nothing as the swell enveloped them both.
"What's going on?"
asked Lorin. Over the noise of the hexes, Master Satil replied,
"I think our young friend has discovered who she really wants to be."
"And who is that?"
Shigar asked. With a high-pitched whine, a shuttle swooped low overhead. Master Satil looked up as the craft came around to land. It displayed Republic insignia and was closely tailed by an Imperial counterpart. They touched down on either side of the tentacle of hexes that had lunged out of the lake. A junior officer of the Republic jogged from the craft that had landed near them and saluted Lorin. Keeping one eye closely on the swarm of hexes that had engulfed Axe and Darth Kratos, the Adarian spoke breathlessly.
We picked up the fringes of an Imperial transmission calling for an emergency evac and followed it down. Is everyone all right?
For the moment, said Master Satil, guiding him away. What's the situation in orbit?
It's hard to explain. Our comms went haywire for a while, and now all our databanks have been wiped.
By who?
I don't know, sir. Captain Pippoliti will fill in you and Director V.E. when I get you back to orbit.
Ula made it too?
Asked Lorin.
We have him aboard right now,
he said.
Found him drifting in a capsule, hollering for help, and picked him up on the way down. Won't explain how he got there, but he seems healthy enough.
That's good, Lorin said. I'm glad he's okay.
Shigar glanced at the shuttle. Was that the envoy's face he could see peering out of viewport? He couldn't tell.
About the hexes,
the young officer ventured, glancing back over his shoulder.
I mean, is it over?
I don't think so, said Master Satil. Not quite. Ula watched from the safety of the shuttle. There was nothing stopping him from leaving his seat. He wasn't under guard or even under suspicion. He could have walked out at any time and thrown himself to the hexes if he wanted to. Jet's betrayal of him still stung, though, so he stayed right where he was. It had started to go wrong before the skyhook had collapsed. After the deflection of the Paramount's missiles, Jet had considered throwing the Paramount itself down onto the target in a desperate attempt to thwart the Hex's plans. Ula had argued against it, unable to bear such a waste of human life.
A thousand or so to save trillions, Jet had said. Isn't that a fair exchange?
We don't even know if it would work, and if it doesn't, we'll be even worse off than we are now.
If you're worried about destroying an Imperial ship,
do you really think I'd let that get in the way of doing the right thing?
Only as he said the words did he realize that he meant it. The issue had become entirely moot when the skyhook had gone down.
Looks like someone's found a way to do what we can't, said Jet. In which case, we're no longer needed. Out of the seat, Director V.E. It's time for us to go our separate ways.
The announcement had taken Ula completely by surprise.
What are you talking about? I'm staying with you.
No, you're not.
Jet had produced a blaster and covered him, while Clunker dragged him from the cockpit. The droid's strength was too great to resist.
We've got business elsewhere.
Wait!
Ula had clung to the lip of the airlock.
Take me with you, please!
Jet had shaken his head, but not without compassion.
You have to find your own place, mate. And I don't think it's going to be with me. Say cheerio to that lovely lady. And stop faking it if you ever hope to have a chance with her.
The airlock had hissed shut. Explosive bolts had fired. And Ula had been flung out into the void. Had the passing shuttle not found him, he might have fallen to the planet below. Or even into the black hole. But Ula didn't suppose that Jet would have left something like that to chance. Now he was within waving distance of Lorin, and he didn't know what to do. The massive hexes that had overwhelmed Darth Kratos retreated into the lake, leaving just the young Sith behind. She turned to face the lake, raised her arms above her head, and spoke to them. The hexes responded, forming new agglomerations, turning their collective mind to new tasks. Some descended back into the lake. Others swarmed toward several different places on the crater wall and combined their pulses into powerful cutting lasers. Vibrations reached him even through the walls and floor of the shuttle. He saw Lorin and the others shift on their feet, as though the ground was kicking beneath them, too. Master Satil approached the young Sith. They exchanged a few words, then parted. The Grand Master returned to Lorin and Shigar and the officer who had run out to meet them. Together they hurried into the shuttle.
"Recall the rest,"
she was saying as she mounted the ramp and entered the main passenger hold.
If they can't make it here in time, send another shuttle.
What's happening?
Ula asked.
What's going on out there?
Master Satil had already left for the cockpit.
I don't know,
said Lorin, smiling at him. The engines whined.
But it looks like we're leaving.
Shigar acknowledged him with a nod, which Ula gravely returned. The Padawan looked no less battered than Lorin and Master Satil. The ground war had obviously been just as grueling as that fought in the air. The shuttle's repulsor lifts pressed Ula back into the seat. He took one last glimpse through the window and saw the crater walls collapsing around the bloody lake. Fiery lava from the molten sea outside crashed in, burning and destroying as it came. Clouds of smoke thickened and curled, hiding the young Sith from view.
You are going to destroy them, said Master Satil.
Axe didn't respond. It wasn't a question, but it demanded an answer, and she was careful to keep it to herself. The hexes were streaming downward to tear the flooded habitat to pieces. When they were done, they would break into the geothermal shafts and keep drilling until the raw magma flooded in from below. What the real lava sea didn't burn, the heat of the core would melt and turn to slag.
What about Lima Zandret? Master Satil pressed. There's not much of that amniotic fluid left, but it could be saved.
Do you think it should be?
Axe asked, thinking of her clone's life in the tank, cut off from the Force, so insulated from the universe around her that she didn't even know what the Empire was. Cinzia could have stopped the hexes at any time, but she hadn't. Lima Zandret's daughter, reborn, and herself, mutated into a horrible echo of motherhood, were more responsible for the damage than the hexes themselves. It was all about control, she realized now. Zandret had tried to control the cloned Cinzia and had lost control of the hexes. Darth Kratos had tried to control Axe, but she had turned on him. Anger wasn't enough on its own. She could still hear her mother screaming.
It's not up to me to decide whether you should save her or not, Master Satil said. But you did promise Cinzia.
Axe had promised many things. To herself, to Darth Kratos, to the Dark Council, and ultimately to the Emperor. But that had been before. Before she had understood that she had choices.
You can expect no mercy from me, Master, the day our positions are reversed.
I lied,
she said. The Grand Master nodded. Axe didn't know whether she understood or not. That she stopped talking was enough. Axe stood and watched the hexes at work while the others fled. The smell of burning blood was sweet in her nostrils. The ash that gently rained on her felt soft and warm,
like feathers.
Slowly the voice faded from her mind. She breathed deeply, feeling at peace. Only the constant bleeding of the shuttle's pilot disturbed her tranquility. She stayed as long as she could. When the ground threatened to dissolve under her, and the sky lit up with shooting stars, orbital hexes falling to their doom, she turned to leave the home her mother had made forever.
Part 6. Preparations for War. Chapter 46.
Lorin had never met Supreme Commander Stantors before, and she barely felt that she had met him now, even after half an hour of debriefing in his office.
There were so many aides hurrying about, bearing messages and sudden crises needing an instant decision that she rarely had his attention for more than a few seconds at a stretch.
Even when she did, she found him very hard to read. Instead of watching his dour Duros face, she concentrated on his long fingers. They tapped, curled, folded, and rested in ways that, she hoped, gave her an insight into what he was thinking.
You say you were followed there?
Yes, sir, she said. The Hutts placed a homing beacon in the Auriga fire.
You knew about that before you left Hutta. I seem to recall reading about that somewhere.
That's correct, sir.
This had all been in her report, and was no doubt in numerous other reports about the incident, but she let no sign of impatience slip through her guard. If he wanted to hear it from her face to face, so be it. He was the Supreme Commander, after all.
We thought the beacon left with Jet Nebula, but it later turned up in the capsule he used to expel Envoy V.
This Jet Nebula, is he a real person?
Yes, sir. His parents had a strange sense of humor, he says.
What? Yes?
An aide had pressed a data pad in front of him. His left index finger stabbed at something on the screen.
That one, of course. Was the Sovereign herself present in her expedition to Sabaddon?
No, sir. She placed someone else in charge, a deputy called Sigrillo.
He's the one who claimed ownership of the planet and declared the remaining joint forces trespassers.
Yes, sir. At the time, he outgunned us. His mistress was taking no chances.
The tips of the Supreme Commander's fingers joined to form a triangle in front of him.
I can imagine his surprise when your reinforcements turned up.
Not just our reinforcements, she wanted to say, but the Imperials as well.
It had only been a matter of time before everyone else arrived. The universe's usual freakish sense of humor had ensured that they all came more or less simultaneously. She remembered those stressful hours very well, even though she hadn't been on the bridge with the senior officers and the negotiators. She had been down in the crew hold, exchanging stories with Hetchke and Jop and the others who had survived the ground assault. They had stopped to watch through the viewports as ships flashed in and out of hyperspace around the black hole. There had been several clashes, leaving wreckage to spin helplessly into the impossibly steep gravity well, and several outlier ships had fallen afoul of the jets themselves. They had waited with minds and bodies poisoned by exhaustion for the call to arms, as it surely had to come. The Republic ships left over from the original mission were going to be pulled in eventually, and every available trooper would be desperately needed. Then suddenly, it had been all behind her. The Commoner had jumped to hyperspace, leaving fresh ships and their commanders to sort out the mess. And that was the last she had seen of Sabaddon and its hexes. Every scrap of data from the campaign had been erased, by some kind of exotic electromagnetic pulse, she had been told. All that remained were confused recollections and reports like the ones she had filed on returning. Very few of them mentioned Dow Striver. During the confusion, the Mandalorian had disappeared, as though into the depths of the black hole itself, never to be seen since.
Do you believe Captain Pippolini acted responsibly in the ensuing confrontation?
Stantors asked her. Lorin chose her words with care. The matter of a reenlistment and promotion was still very much undecided, and she didn't want to jeopardize any chances that might remain.
I think she did her best in a difficult situation, sir. No one could fault her for that.
The service asks of us not our best, but the best possible. Is that what Captain Pippolini offered?
It was the same question in different words, and Stantors didn't strike Lorin as a being who repeated himself very often.
I believe so, sir. Every installation on the planet was in flames. All our troops had been evacuated. The mission had already cost the Republic more resources than it could afford, and sticking around would have squandered even more. Withdrawal was therefore the most sensible action to take.
The Supreme Commander's hands came to rest face down on the desk in front of him.
That's good to hear, Moxla, because I'm thinking of promoting Pippolini to Colonel over some pretty stiff opposition. The kind of people who think we owe everything to the Jedi, if you can imagine that. And it's good to be backed up by the opinion of someone I can trust. I'm not wrong in thinking that I can trust you, am I, Moxla?
He undoubtedly knew her history with the Black Stars, so there was no point prevaricating now.
Sir, you can always trust me to speak out if I think a superior officer isn't pulling her weight.
That's what I thought. And that's exactly what I need. There's what? Can't he wait?
Another aide this time, whispering in the Supreme Commander's ear.
All right.
His hands rested impotently in his lap.
Well, I'll make this brief, Moxla. The SSOs you fought with on Sabaddon, a messy bunch, but showed a lot of guts. We're going to form a new Special Forces squad around them, and we want you to be a part of it.
We can't erase your record, but we can add a commendation or two, post-factum, to spruce it up a little, and change some of the wording. You'll retain the rank you were given, breveted, of course, and have the first pick of the troops. What do you say to that?
Surprise got the better of her tongue.
Yes, sir.
You don't sound particularly enthused, Lieutenant Moxler.
It didn't take her long to snap out of herself. Anything was better than sitting around in Coruscant's underbelly, waiting for the axe to fall. Either outright war with the Empire was going to break out any day, or the Republic's ability to maintain the peace on its own worlds would fail. This way, she would be right in the thick of it, where she could maybe do some good. She would be working, and if she was lucky, she might be able to bring some people she trusted absolutely along with her. Sess Jop, for one. She snapped to attention and saluted with appropriate enthusiasm.
You couldn't have picked anyone better, she said. Give me a month and your squad will be as polished as your desk.
Don't get me started on that, Moxler,
he said with a sudden rap of his knuckles on the greel wood surface.
Nothing's as clean as it looks.
Another aide approached, and the Supreme Commander waved her away.
Get to it, Moxler. You have my absolute confidence.
Loren saluted again and marched for the door. Aides parted before her, watching with eyes that gave away nothing.
How did it go?
Asked Ula, meeting her in the antechamber outside and matching her pace for pace along the corridor.
Very well, considering, she said. Did you have anything to do with that?
Unlikely, he said. I've been shifted to a portfolio and data collection.
So he wasn't being modest this time.
I'm sorry, Ula.
No, it's okay. I found my last job a little too stimulating.
He smiled, and she found herself smiling along. Ula, still acting as envoy then, had looked out for her on returning to Coruscant, greasing the path to the Supreme Commander's attention by making sure officers senior to her didn't dismiss her out of hand or take credit for her actions. Captain Pippoliti might have played a role in that as well. That the captain was being promoted suggested she had Stantor's ear on many things to do with Sabaddon, and Lorin had certainly helped the whole affair from becoming a complete rout.
What are you doing now?
Ula asked her. She didn't answer immediately, remembering how Ula had cleaned up her wounded hand on the Auriga fire, and how pleased he'd been to see her when the shuttle had collected them from the burning world. She flexed her new fingers, a proper prosthetic at last, surgically grafted to her, indistinguishable from a real hand, and wondered who would look after him in his new role.
I have to meet someone right now, she said, and then it looks like I'll be on the move for a while. But I'd like to catch up with you when I get back.
His smile grew wider.
I can wait.
That's assuming you'll still be around, of course.
The chances of me going anywhere are very slim now.
Great. We can drink reactor cores and talk about old times.
I'm sure we'll have lots more to talk about by then.
What? The birth and death statistics of Sector 4?
Just for starters.
At the exit to the building, they stopped and looked at each other. Was it her imagination? Or did he look younger, lighter than he had before? It was probably the smile, she decided. She wanted him to stay that way when she was around. She reached out and took his left hand in hers. Her artificial fingers squeezed lightly. When she walked away, she knew he was watching her all the way down the steps to the plaza below. Shigar was waiting for her at the cenotaph of the Innocents, pacing back and forth in front of the first bank of Asari trees. The troubled cast to his brow perfectly matched the heavy gray skies above. He was back in Jedi Browns, with a new lightsaber swinging at his hip, but he seemed a completely different person from the one she had met in the old districts not so very long ago. He moved stiffly, still favoring a wound in his side. His hair, cut shorter by Darth Kratos on Sabaddon, hung limply around his face. Watching him, Lorin almost regretted coming. He glanced up as she approached. The blue clan markings on his cheeks looked faded and worn.
You're still in uniform. That's a good sign.
Did you think they'd strip me naked and throw me onto the street?
She came to a halt in front of him.
And now you're smiling. Things must have gone well.
They did.
I'm pleased, Loren.
Well, likewise. Hello, by the way.
Hello. Let's go over here.
He led her to a stand of trees planted as a memorial to the people who had died during the Empire's sacking of the Jedi Temple. One sapling for each victim had grown into a small forest, with grottos and benches for people to pass a moment in contemplation. They sat side by side, close but not touching, and it seemed for a long while that Shigar wasn't going to say anything at all. The restless branches rustled above them, moving back and forth in ways that had nothing at all to do with the wind.
I want to ask you something,
he finally said.
And I want to tell you something, so we're even. Do you want to go first?
Not particularly, but I will if you want me to.
Fire away.
Did I do the right thing, bringing you along with me?
That surprised her. She had been afraid that he was about to reveal that he had changed his mind and wanted to revisit the possibility of romance between them. If he had said that, she would have been forced to find words to explain the way she had felt on that front, and she doubted any such words existed. She knew exactly where those feelings had come from, but she hadn't quite worked out what they were now. And then there was Ula, whom she definitely intended to look up when she got back.
I guess, she said, it depends on what you mean by right.
He grimaced.
That doesn't really help.
Well, let me tell you what I was going to say, and maybe that will help. It's this. Thank you.
For what?
Just thanks.
Why?
She rolled her eyes.
You're going to make me explain it, aren't you?
If it's not too much trouble.
He managed a twitch of his lips that might have been a smile.
It's pretty simple, really. You came across me when things were the darkest they had ever been. I had no security, no family, no purpose, no life, really. You offered me all of those things. Relatively speaking, of course. I'd never come up against anything like the Hexes before, and I'd always prided myself on keeping most of my limbs intact. But the essentials were there. We had the mission, we had roles to play, and I had you.
She raised a hand to stop him talking over her.
I know I didn't have you in any possessive sense, but you represented more to me than just some guy I'd bumped into. You're Kifar, like me, and there aren't many of us out there now, so that made you family. And you had my back when things got tough, so that made you like my squad, I guess. You were everything I'd been missing, without ever being able to say so.
I'm flattered,
he said.
Don't be,
she said.
It wasn't really anything to do with you. Any other handsome, well-armed Kifar would have fit the bill.
She smiled, to take the sting off her words, and he smiled in return.
I'm glad,
he said.
That makes me feel like I did do the right thing.
Well, think that now, but the day I'm in the Empire's sights and out of ammo, know that you'll be the first I blame. At least I'll have a proper squad with me then. So that's one box ticked.
She was surprised by a sudden upwelling of emotion. She really was grateful, but she didn't know how to convey it, except with a joke.
Were you seriously thinking I wish I'd never come? Don't you remember how I used to smell?
It still gives me nightmares.
Besides, I reckon you have a lot more to worry about now.
He sobered.
What do you mean?
Well, the fact that you're wondering about what you did tells me you've entered a whole new world of uncertainty. Doing the right thing isn't so easy in the real world, is it?
He studied the grass at their feet.
No.
So you learned that lesson, which means you'll probably become a proper Jedi Knight now. But in the process, you come to the shocking realization that nothing will ever be black and white again. It's all gray.
Not all of it,
he said.
There's still some black.
But white is hard to find, right?
She put her prosthetic hand on his shoulder.
You're a warrior now. Eventually, you'll only see in two colors, black and red. Best get used to that if you're going to stay on the front line.
Do I have a choice?
Sure you do. With the life you've had, you've always had a choice.
Do you still think I've had it easy?
No, my friend. No.
The flash of anger in his deep green eyes had come too quickly. She worried about that. But she knew she'd said enough. It wasn't her job to bang his head into shape.
Everyone knows Clan Kanshi got a raw deal when it came to looks.
That put the anger back in its place, where it could simmer until it found another outlet. She pitied the next person who met him on the wrong end of his lightsaber.
I should go, he said. The council must surely be finished deliberating by now.
That's life in wartime, she said. A whole lot of waiting around between bouts of being shot at.
Don't forget to duck, Lorin.
They stood and faced each other.
Don't you forget to keep looking for the white,
she said, putting her arms around him and giving him a quick squeeze.
It's out there somewhere. You just have to find it.
He nodded. They left the cenotaph of the Innocents by separate paths. She didn't look back.
Chapter 47.
Hello, Mother. Sorry I've been out of touch for so long. Work has kept me very busy, but I'll tell you all about that another time. Call me on Coruscant when you have the chance.
Ula closed the line and settled back to wait. He didn't think it would be long. After the loss of Darth Kratos, the failure of the Cinzia to amount to anything, and the erasure of the fleet's databanks, he was sure someone would want to hear his side of the story. What that would be, he had given a great deal of thought. His comlink bleeped, warning him the call was imminent. That was impressively fast. So fast, in fact, that it made him wonder. Ordinarily, someone on Panatha would note the message, then relay the coded request up the lines of command to Watcher 3, who would then issue orders that would filter back down the lines of command, resulting in that simple ping. Ordinarily, this process could take hours, occasionally tens of minutes, never seconds. Ula looked around his apartment. It seemed smaller than he remembered, and now had a hostile cast to it as well. He would conduct a sweep later that evening in the hope of finding the bug he was now sure was there. Whether he would destroy the bug or not remained an open question. The holo projector flickered. He stood in front of it and blanked his face. One of the first things he had learned about espionage was that an apparent lack of emotion enhanced both the credibility of one's reports and the illusion of authority. That, he suspected, was why he had never seen Watcher 3's face in more than shadowy outline. That outline appeared before him now, flickering and straining, as though coming from the other side of the universe. For all Ula knew, though, Watcher 3 was on Coruscant as well, perhaps just up the road. Anything was possible. He knew of at least two other intelligence operatives who lived on his block, seeking a similar balance between easy access to the Senate and a ready escape route.
"Reports," said Watcher 3.
Ula needed to go back as far as his arrival on Hutta in order to tell the story properly. He didn't lie once, but he told far less than the whole truth. As with all intelligence work, much was told by implication. He left Watcher 3 to deduce that his rapid advancement from envoy to commander of the joint fleet had less to do with his own abilities than the need for a puppet in both positions. He also let Watcher 3 decide that Darth Kratos was the person behind the second placement. Who better, after all, to place the blame on than someone who couldn't defend himself?
"The last report Stantors received that I saw before being transferred," Ula concluded, "suggested that Sabaton's orbit had been disturbed, leading to its imminent destruction by the Black Hole. Some small amounts of rare metals have been scavenged by the Republic, but Imperial attacks have kept that to a minimum. No wreckage has been recovered from any of the sites established by Lima Zandrit and her fellow fugitives."
Watcher 3 didn't divulge whether or not that accorded with reports made by Colonel Kalish. He also didn't mention the mysterious takeover of Kalish's ships or the matter of the databank's erasure. A computer virus propagated by the infected ships was sufficient to explain away the latter, and the colonel's natural disinclination to admit that his ships had ever been out of his control fixed the former.